Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today is Morgan Peckmer. And Morgan filmed a movie about Roger Stone called Get Me Roger Stone. And he's here to talk about Stone's pardon. So how long ago did you film Get Me Roger Stone, Morgan?
Get Me Roger Stone came out on Netflix in 2017, but it was 5.5 years in the making. We started following Roger in 2011. We filmed him all through the 2012 presidential cycle, and we never realized what a long journey it would be, but we followed him all the way through early 2017.
So what made you decide to do a film on Roger Stone?
I met Roger when I was moderating a panel of political journalists in New York City, and Roger likes to cultivate journalists and have a tight relationship with them so that he can influence them. And afterwards, I was introduced to Roger, and I knew Roger's name, but I wasn't familiar really with his exploits. But as I was speaking with this flamboyant character, I felt like all the eyes in the room were on us. And that is not something that is an experience I usually have. And I became so intrigued by, who is this Roger Stone guy? And I went home that evening and I read a profile in The New Yorker by Jeffrey Toobin about him. And I was absolutely enthralled. And I saw in Roger the opportunity to tell the story of the degradation of American politics since the Nixon era through the life of this bodybuilding, pot-smoking, dandy swinger. And I thought, this is a political movie that could reach a wide audience because he's just such a dynamic and eccentric figure. So I teamed up with Dylan Bank and Daniel DeMauro, my co-directors of Get Me Roger Stone, and we set out for a 3-hour tour like Gilligan, and 5.5 years later, we finished our film.
So when you first met him, you really didn't know too much of his background. You didn't know his background going back Nixon, right?
Well, as I did learn it, you know, from reading that profile, but
right.
This was a very unique moment in Roger's life. It was actually the nadir of his career. He was considered a down and out, dirty trickster, somebody who was used to be a big deal in Washington because he was one of the biggest lobbyists and consultants, but now had been relegated to being this kind of mudslinger from the shadows. And I think that's probably why Roger signed on. He was looking to get attention again. He was looking to revive his career. But during the course of our time following him, his 29-year project to make Donald Trump the president came to fruition, which was absolutely astounding for us. It was a shock for him. And so when we set out initially, when we were interviewing him, you know, we thought that his obsession with making Trump was a joke. And Roger, as so oftentimes,
according to Howard Stern has said that Donald Trump had originally threw his hat in the ring as a publicity stunt. Now, you know, and I remember talking, you know, right after the election to some people, and they were kind of shocked that Donald Trump did win. Okay, my question to you is, Donald Trump is not as popular as he was before the last election. Why do you think he's still in it?
Well, he's the sitting president of the United States, and he has a tremendous advantage as an incumbent. So he certainly cannot be counted out. And I think that with Donald Trump, initially it was a publicity stunt. When Roger Stone first tried to get Trump to run for the presidency in 1987, Trump got a lot of exposure, and that was, you know, exposure is what he craves most. In 2000, Roger got Trump to flirt with running for president on the Reform Party line. Again, he got a lot of attention before he pulled out, never really launched a campaign. And then 2012, he was leading in the polls. Again, he never became a real candidate before bowing out. And if you can recall, soon after at the presidential correspondence dinner, Barack Obama really lit into Donald Trump and ridiculed him. And that was one of the things that put the fire in Trump's belly. He said, well, I'm going to show him. But still, the 2016 campaign started off as not on, on a lark, but that Trump figured he had nothing to lose. He would raise his profile. It would make him, you know, again, a national, perhaps a global figure. And he, once he won the Republican nomination, it was a total win for him. He became arguably the most famous person in the world. And after winning the presidency, which was a shock to him, you know, this time around, the stakes are so much higher. Because if he lost in 2016, everyone would be like, oh, of course he lost. Well, if he loses in 2020, people will say that he was, that he's a colossal loser. And they'll say that he lost because he was a terrible president. They will ridicule him. And he fears ridicule. And he wants to cement his place in history. And if he wins a second term, he will have been an enormously influential figure in American history, even more so than he already is.
But, you know, bowing out now before the election would be less humiliating than him losing at the polls, wouldn't you think?
I don't think so. You know, we've had very few presidents decide not to run for re-election. Last one was Lyndon Johnson, of course. I think that Trump still has a good chance of winning despite where he stands in the polls. Certainly, you know, Hillary Clinton was smashing him in the polls right now. And the electorate is unpredictable. The times are unpredictable. Nobody foresaw a 2020 like this. And
right.
Trump has raised the largest, you know, treasury of any candidate in history. And whether there will be, again, malfeasance in this election cycle or how it will play out on election day, this is going to be an unprecedented vote because so many people will be voting by mail. There's a lot of X factors, and so it would be foolish to count Donald Trump out.
You know, we're in the election cycle of 2020, and what I see going on the Democratic side isn't exactly pretty. I don't think that the Democrats are, honestly speaking, are in this to win. And I think Trump does have a good chance of possibly putting it, pulling this off. And I think the rise of Donald Trump is a direct effect to the Democrats over the past couple. Would you agree with me?
Well, Donald Trump is a reflection of what our nation has become. He is a reflection of the erosion of our democracy, the fact that the moneyed interests and the corporations control both parties, the disillusionment that so many people feel with the direction of the nation, the yawning inequality gap, all the he was able to exploit all of the weaknesses in our country and in our system right now. And certainly Hillary Clinton didn't get that And Joe Biden's strategy so far has essentially been to stay out of the way and let Trump self-destruct. And that seems to have really been a shrewd strategy so far, but nobody has been elected president, at least in my lifetime, by just being the other person. They've needed to galvanize the electorate around their own magnetism, around their own charisma. And that's not something that we've seen with Joe Biden, but we've also mm-hmm. not seen so much revulsion at a president as we've seen with Trump.
This is true. Now, you said that that Roger Stone reflects politics over the past maybe 40 or 50 years back into the 70s. Could you blame a lot of the problems in politics on Roger Stone?
Look, Roger has had a figurative role in shaping our politics. Roger was the youngest person called before the Watergate grand jury when he was just 19 years old, and he learned
wow.
dirty tricks at the knee of his idol Richard Nixon. And then what Roger goes on to do is to be integral in creating the first super PAC. In the wake of the 1976 Buckley v. Valeo decision. So he helps usher in the era of unlimited dark money that comes in and really deals a terrible blow to our system, where somebody can just be destroyed with money that nobody knows who put it up. He was very influential in taking out a lot of the old lion Democratic liberal senators, and then he's integral in the rise of Ronald Reagan. And then after he helps elect Reagan to the White House in 1980, he and Paul Manafort and Charlie Black, three of the key players in the Reagan campaign, come together and they form Black, Manafort, and Stone, which really is the first super lobbying company in Washington, D.C. And what their firm does is they become the first company that is both an electoral arm and a lobbying firm. So before Black, Manafort, and Stone, it was considered distasteful that you would lobby the same people that you elected to office. Black, Manafort, and Stone said, how naive is that? We can cash into the tune of millions of dollars. And that's what they do. They turn around and start lobbying the Reagan administration, and they beat the hottest firm on K Street. And so, you know, the rise of the consultant lobbying class in D.C. is one of the key factors in the rise of corruption in the nation's capital, the unlimited money, the erosion of our system that comes under the Reagan administration. Roger is involved in the 2000 recount, shutting it down. That was a watershed moment in the public losing faith in the integrity of our electoral system. And then, of course, the blow of Donald Trump to becoming the president. He's eroded virtually all the remaining norms that we had in this country. And Roger Stone was right there every step of the way. And so his influence on our system cannot be undervalued.
Wow. So you and your filmers,
directors,
directors. I'm sorry.
We were the co-directors, writers, and producers of the film.
Guys wrote a article for the New York Times just recently, like Sunday, I think it was, Saturday or Sunday. So, what basically did you spell out in that article?
Well, what we say is that Donald Trump doesn't do anything without calculating his self-interest. And if you look at the Stone commutation, it was obviously going to be a PR hit to the president, and it was going to look bad that he was bailing out his buddy, a person who and Stone's conviction came out of the Mueller probe, and to dust up the Russia investigation again, the president has no interest in doing so. So we asked, why now? Why did he do this? And what we postulate is that he needs Roger Stone in his corner because he's slumping in the polls, and Roger has more experience winning winning presidential elections for Republican candidates than virtually anybody else on earth. Maybe more so than anybody else on earth. And he also knows how to run a Donald Trump campaign, a no holds barred, raised earth, destroy everything in your path type of campaign. And this is when he needs Roger Stone's help more than ever. And that's why we think he commuted his sentence now at this time of great need for himself.
So you think the plus outweighs the minuses?
Look, is there even such a thing as a minus for Donald Trump at this point? He has done so many things that pundits have said would be the death knell of his candidacy, of his presidency, that people think are absolutely appalling. You know, is the public going to react with greater disgust that he commutes the sentence of Roger Stone than they are that he isn't confronted Vladimir Putin about the fact that Russians put out bounties on American troops, and Donald Trump hasn't said a thing about that? You know, so the way that the news cycle works now and the short attention span of the American public, these things fly by. You know, if you remember, just last year we were in the heat of the Mueller investigation, and now that is so far in the background. And in January of last year, Michael Cohen was coming in to testify before Congress, and everyone said that would be the end of Trump. And so, you know, I think that this Roger Stone commutation will be soon forgotten, unfortunately. But Trump will reap the upside, and it will only be, you know, a minimal downside to him.
Now, I remember you telling me that you really enjoyed the convention that you went to for Donald Trump. And obviously there might not be a convention this year. So what was so exciting about the 2016 Republican convention for you?
Well, I wouldn't say it was so exciting. I'd say that it was certainly a experience that I will never forget. It was just such a bizarre confluence of people and forces. But really what sticks with me most was that at the convention was the first time that I thought Trump could really win, because I saw the electricity around his candidacy. I saw how enthused his supporters were that they, you know, that the party had already moved to being the Donald Trump party, not the Republican party of old. And then the speech that he gave at the convention was, I think, is arguably his most effective speech that he has ever given, when he made the argument about the corruption of the Democrats, the corruption of the system, that he could be this change agent. And obviously he didn't write that speech, because it's inconsistent with the voice and the tone that he struck at so many other junctures as a candidate and as a president. But what he did was he showed what was the model to be a successful candidate. And these ideas of draining the swamp, taking on Washington corruption, flushing out the old guard, empowering forgotten Americans, speaking to all the people who feel disenfranchised, disillusioned from the system. I mean, those are powerful messages that he wrote into the White House. But, you know, the bottom line is he just didn't really care about any of those things. That was all campaign rhetoric.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Trump has aligned himself with Roger Stone, also Roy Cohen. Do you think that they, the people of questionable characters like them, are attracted to Trump, or is Trump attracted to this kind of person?
It's mutual. I mean, Roy Cohn was one of the worst people in American history. And when he saw Donald Trump, as he says in our film, in the archival clip from the early 80s, that said, I think that Trump is the closest thing to a genius that we have in this country. Roy Cohn immediately saw the showmanship of Donald Trump, his ability to his charisma, and he saw, wow, this is somebody who is going to have enduring impact on America. And he actually introduced Roger Stone, who was his protege, to Donald Trump. And he said, you guys are going to work well together. And so that kind of crucible between those three men has had an enormous effect on all of our lives, on American history. And the fact that Roger Stone's two heroes are Richard Nixon and Roy Cohn says everything about Roger Stone.
So in a brief nutshell, can you tell our listening audience why they should watch Get Me Roger Stone? I'm sure it's still on Netflix, right?
It will always be on Netflix because it's a Netflix movie. I think that what our film illuminates is how we got here and how Trump became elected. And I think that if we don't understand the lessons of history, we are doomed to repeat them. And I think that it will also put in perspective just how dangerous Roger Stone is and why they cannot count out Donald Trump in this 2020 election. And even if Donald Trump loses, how that Roger Stone will continue to have some sort of formative role in shaping our lives, because he has again and again found a way.
So this pardon, he was convicted of felonies. That should be a strike against him. Do you think he'll still continue to do the things that he's done in the past?
Well, I think that Roger will be more careful. You know, this was a very damaging experience for Roger. He essentially is broke now because of his exorbitant legal fees. He was just days away from having to report to prison for a 40-month sentence. He's 67 years old now. He certainly doesn't want to live out the rest of the day of his days in prison. His lifelong friend, Paul Manafort, if you see what the before and after pictures of when he was on trial versus what he looked like when he was in prison and released because of COVID. He's a man who's been destroyed by prison. You know, Roger doesn't want any of those things. There are so scuttlebutt that, oh, Roger wants to go to prison. It's like, that is nonsense. Roger did not want to spend a day in prison and put whatever pressure he could on Trump to make that decision before, you know, he spent a single night in a cell. And so, you know, I think that, you know, that I guess I think the fact that, yes, he is a felon, a pardon is something that clears your record. A commutation just means that you don't have to serve your prison time. I don't think that he will be chastened by that, but I do think that he will be more cautious.
So we have 2 minutes left, Morgan. tell everybody listening a little bit about you, your background. You know, you've done many great things in the state of New York and nationally.
My career, toggling between the worlds of being a political journalist. I was editor-in-chief of City and State magazine, which is the main magazine that covers New York City and New York State politics. I was the executive director of two good government organizations, one founded by former New York City Parks Commissioner Henry Stern and one founded by Democratic activist Bill Samuels. And I've also been a filmmaker throughout my adult life. And for me, all those things are entwined. My mission is good government, not advocating for a party or for a partisan agenda, but advocating for the people against the forces of power that use the system for their own benefit, not for ours.
So if somebody wants to know more about you, do you have a website, a Facebook page, a Twitter account? How could they learn more about you?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Morgan Pehma. That's MorganPehme. I guess you can read about me on Wikipedia, but, you know, I tend to find a way to make my work known. You know, I hope that people pay attention, greater attention to the workings of our government and don't get tripped up in the rhetoric of politicians, but focus more on their actions to really understand what they're about and what underlies their motivation.
Morgan, it's such a pleasure. You and I haven't spoken in quite a while. It's so great talking with you again.
It's such a pleasure, Cynthia. I'm so glad that you're on the Pacifica Network. I'm so glad that, you know, everybody should tune into your show. You always have such fascinating conversations, fascinating guests. You're a real gem for New York State and just for radio across the board.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. You have been listening to Morgan Pehma. This is All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Morgan, thank you, and thank you everybody for listening. Stay tuned. It's going to be an exciting political year. Bye, everyone.